Thank you. Aside from diet being a positive and chemicals being a negative, what other things outside of diet and avoiding chemicals should we be doing to prevent inflammation? And what other things outside of diet and chemicals should we be doing to prevent Parkinson's? Good. Dr. Rao, then Dr. Pai, and then Ray.
One of my biggest focuses is kind of the control of the stress response. And so I think that, with the way that our adrenals as well as our vagus nerve communicate with the brain and the inflammation that changes when cortisol goes up and the vagus nerve goes down, there's a lot more inflammatory cytokines that get released, and these signaling messages can get very confusing in the body and create all these itises. So a simple thing that I think would really help neurocognitive health or any sort of organ health would be a concept of stress reduction on a daily basis, whether that's meditation or yoga or deep breathing. But it should not be a workout. It should not be, I go to my yoga class 2 times a week and so I'm good. It's literally a daily practice once or twice a day to kind of calm down the system. And I think periods of quiet and silence are really, really essential. And that also goes for periods of fasting, and which help the gut microbiome regenerate and create resilience genes within our body. So I would add another big intervention aside from what we've heard already is the concept of creating more quiet silence and maybe periods of time where we're more fasting or not eating. One of our biggest tools for longevity and aging can be caloric restriction, which is very hard to do. But if you kind of change the way that we eat and not eat 12 hours in a day, but maybe eat 8 hours in the day, I think that simple concept can go a long way when it comes to metabolic issues, cognitive health, and many, many other sources of inflammation within our body. That would be another thing that I would focus on.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree 100%. We aside of the diet and aside of the chemicals, it's it's because stress triggers inflammation, as we know, just by itself, right? So we can put an animal or a human in the biosphere, control all the environment, organic food, clean air, clean environment, have perfect exercise. A couple of those people don't get along together in the biosphere, and what happened in the results? All their inflammatory markers went off the chart, right? So we know that in the perfect world, and if you had a a laboratory rat as a human in these studies, stress causes inflammation. We know that, right? So stress, you can be completely plant-based and have stress and still have a heart attack. You can still get cancer. You can, stress is the underlying emotional inflammation that is upon all of us, particularly in 2024 this year, and since what we've gone through the last couple of years of a lot of stress worldwide with pandemic and everything else like that in politics. So I agree with Jyoti's, like doing some kind of mindfulness meditation. We like to practice heart rate variability practices and actually get biofeedback and really train our clients how to really bring that resolve, because that lowers, when people have the heart rate variability balance, it will lower inflammation directly. It will increase natural killer cell functioning and actually increases longevity as well. So these are simple things aside of, controlling the diet and lifestyle, because some things we don't have control over, and stress is a bigger one. So stress is super important. Having sense of community, having, love, happiness, these are other things that are not necessarily pills, but these are really important, because when we look at also like blue zone people, again, going back to that kind of concept, is that the blue zone people, we have aside of their diet and their environment, is we're looking at what are the other social economic kind of things that they're still working with. And as we get older here, unfortunately, we're a country or a community that kind of strips away adults as they get older in terms of that community or sense of purpose and keeping the brain active. And we have to start doing some of those things, because those also keep us a little bit more resilient and protect us from some of these onslaught of, again, of chemicals and toxins that we may not be perfectly able to avoid.
Thank you.
The one I would add is the big one is exercise in terms of like the modifying disease course. So vigorous exercise, the equivalent to 3.5 to 4 hours a week of running or swimming. I was late today because I was not biking fast enough. It's been associated with a 20% decreased risk of developing Parkinson's disease decades later. For people with Parkinson's disease, exercise likely modifies the disease course and certainly a benefit.
Thank you. So, following up on the question of stress, a lot of people are interested in asking Dr. Pai about his Bosmeric product. He's spoken about it, he put a lot of time and effort It has great benefits. It's anti-inflammatory, and there's a lot of really great properties to it. And a lot of us really are interested because we think if we take this, then that'll make us healthier. So we're very interested. But which is more powerful in your mind, Dr. Pai? If we had to choose, we could take Bosmeric, but we also, the same time or hour that we take the Bosmeric, we fill our heart with hate towards Donald Trump or Joe Biden, or we don't take it and we keep our heart open. In other words, is our thoughts creating chemicals in our body that are the equivalent of the food, the drugs, the supplements? Like, is thinking in a loving, compassionate, empathetic, grateful way actually a scientific thing that creates drugs in your body, and thinking with resentment and judgment and hate a scientific thing that creates chemicals? Or is it just a nice thing that we like to say that you should, because we think it's nice to say?
So there is data to show that, right? So like, so that's what we're trying to fill with love, contentment, you know, and that's why some people who live in areas or in communities that have that environment, they are healthier on one level. However, I don't like to pit like saying like, well, should they take Bosmeric or should they have an open heart? I'd be doing both. And the reason is because what you said, it is a very stressful time, right? And so we all can't go into a mountaintop and live with some kind of guru or live in a cave or something like that. We live in a city, or we live in the rural area. We're living in America right now where, as you're mentioning, there's hatred on both sides of the aisle, which is causing inflammation to everyone. So I'm someone who's looking at risk reduction. I'm not a perfectionist. I'm a risk reductionist. So I would be doing both. I'd be taking Bosmeric because I'd still want to lower the inflammatory responses they're having. Even if you have a healthy lifestyle, we're being more now proactive. We can help with the epigenetic factors. We can help stimulate genes that we want to turn on and help stimulate genes that we want to turn off and turn down hundreds of different inflammatory markers that we should be turning down, because we're also going to be exposed to a lot of these variety of these other things like chemicals, and we talked about pro-inflammatory foods. But I'd also be working on having an open heart or being more heart-centered, because as we all know, that's triggering inflammation. So I don't want to be taking an anti-inflammatory and kind of decreasing the efficacy of that. I'd want to be doing both. So I'm someone who would double down on doing both to reduce the reduction of inflammation, both from a mind perspective and a body perspective as well.
Dr. Rao and Ray, would you like to answer that also?
I have never found any one intervention to be the end all be all in isolation. So I feel like this product sounds like it's amazing. And I might actually want to talk to you about it afterwards to see if I can use it in practice. Yeah. It sounds awesome. But I think that, you know, like most things that come in packages and supplements, they're useful in conjunction with other things. And I feel like with my 30 years in medicine right now, no two people have the same path in terms of having the same diagnosis, and their interventions are very subject to what their body has the reserve to do, the resilience that they have. But almost cumulatively, because of epigenetics, because we can change so many things with lifestyle, optimism and hopefulness is such a powerful tool as well. There is data that shows that it can increase longevity by 11 to 15%. And so to work on positive emotions on a daily basis, and that's where things like meditation and exercise and keeping journals of gratitude, as well as kind of journals doing, you know, thoughts of kindness and kind of journaling happy moments, not just sad moments, but doing acts of random kindness to people can grow our potential for becoming more optimistic and hopeful and create more positive emotions. So just like anything else, I feel like it's a work in progress. Because people don't necessarily, when they're ill, start off being very hopeful sometimes, but we can all cultivate it and become more hopeful. And I think at the end of the day, the studies are showing that people are becoming more resilient. They recover from heart disease better. They're living longer because of hopefulness. Is it going to definitely cure cancer? Maybe not, but it's part of the solution of why not try to be doing the best we can with the tools that we have.
Thank you.
I'm not familiar with the product, so I'll pass.
Well, just more on the impact of our thoughts, our compassion or empathy or non-judgment. Is this create, you know, we talk about food and supplements and drugs. Does this create chemicals in our body that positively and negatively affect us? Or is that something that we don't really know enough about?
I don't know, but I would advise it. I think there's lots of moral philosophy and centuries of teaching that suggests that that's the way all of us should be living our lives.
Okay. During the 17-day conference, there's a lot of participants and speakers that have a natural approach to health, towards diet and health, and many of them are very open to encouraging complementary types of integrative medicine. What part of mainstream medicine would you encourage us to embrace and use? In other words, some of us are really feeling like we're very skeptical when we hear someone advise us to follow mainstream medical protocols and pharmaceutical drugs because of a lot of the things we read. And it's possible that we've gone too far to one direction. So what part of mainstream medicine do you like? Would you encourage us to embrace and be open to? Well, three of you could answer that.
Who first?
I'll try it. One, we should recognize the great grave shortcomings in mainstream medicine. So I think we're all around the same age. So 25 years ago, life expectancy today in the United States is lower than it was 25 years ago when I was in medical school. We spend 50% more on healthcare today than we did 25 years ago when I was in medical school. So clearly, the solution to improving health and well-being is not to spend more on doctors and hospitals. Second is what is really valuable, I think, are physicians, clinicians who are dedicated to caring for people instead of doing things to people. So I always tell my family members and others, is a doctor caring for you or are they doing something to you? If they're caring for you, that's a really, really good sign of a clinician. If they're doing something to you, then I think you have to be a little more circumspect.
Thank you.
I think that mainstream medicine has definitely a role. I mean, when it comes to things that are life-saving, I'm not going to poo-poo any sort of interventions, the surgeries, chemotherapy. We have amazing technology that can do a lot, organ replacement, things like that. I think that we don't put enough focus on the control that each individual has in their own health destiny, which is, instead of going to the doctor all the time for things that they feel like or kind of a whack-a-mole medicine, which is, I have a pain here, so we're going to whack it with this, and then I'm going to get a side effect, and I'm going to whack it with that. The whole big picture is to step back. And I think going back to the basics, Dr. Pai had spoken about the blue zones and, simply living, like simple life, which is being out in nature, walking on the grass, eating whole foods, things that aren't spoiled, going back to basic stuff of living, sleeping more, Sundays off where we're not working, we're not having 2 weeks of vacation in an entire, year, slowing down, having periods of quiet. Nothing can replace that in addition to all the technology that we have. I think sometimes we have to go back in time and kind of just go back to a simpler life, cooking more often in the kitchen as opposed to doing fast food, right? So just a simple, basic life in addition to all this great technology that we have can make a huge difference, but not relying on the whack-a-mole approach, which is I have a symptom and that's where I'm going to go see my doctors. Every day, I think our body's telling us something, even fatigue, weight gain, insomnia. These are symptoms that our bodies are telling us that something's out of balance. We need to do something different. And most of that something could be oftentimes lifestyle. So I say, always start with lifestyle, see what you could do. Obviously, use your physicians, get data, go get labs, go get tested to see if there's something wrong. So I think that there's a lot of useful information on, both ends of modern traditional and the incorporation of lifestyle and an integrative approach.
Thank you.
Lifestyle is key, right? Like we have a integrative medicine health and lifestyle center, 25 years ago. And a lot of people said, why do you have lifestyle? Now there's lifestyle medicine. It's very interesting. It's a whole like field, right? Because we understand the importance of diet and stress reduction and sleep and exercise and all these other things. But from our perspective, being very integrative is like I never want to throw out also like what Jyoti is talking about is all these wonderful technologies. We can do testing. The problem is that a lot of times the testing is not focused to what we're looking for from an integrative or functional standpoint, or just by the sheer appointment and on Saturday on the last video on the last lecture, I gave like the test that your doctors usually don't order, because I like to educate the patients or people who come see me or people in general is understand like you have a short time with your doctor, maybe less than 10 minutes, right? And so what can you provide them in this short period of time? And I know like that Ray and Jyoti, like me, we'll spend a lot more time with our patients because we're different type of clinicians. But in just the general system where people are being kind of shuffled in the factory medicine, as we call it, in that 10 minutes, then they need to be proactive. And if they have a basic minimal understanding of what can be tested, then they can help guide their practitioner or provider on helping them find a little bit more maybe possible imbalances. But there's a lot of things, even in the general primary care conventional testing, that does not test the dis-ease. They're just looking for the disease. And that's when we look at more of an integrative functional approach, then that could be the best of everything. Because we're still using science and technology, but you still need to do the dietary and lifestyle changes to actually improve those functions.